fine folks at Wallace Miller bringing someone in as always. They do a great job. And Nick Kelly, it's good to see you again, my friend. How are you doing?
Doing great, John. Nice to be back.
Feeling good on a Saturday afternoon?
Feeling great. Great.
You going to make a little trip of it down? Do you live downtown or do you live in the burbs?
I live in Bucktown.
Okay.
So not too far from here, but I love this office. I mean, the view is awesome.
Well, we appreciate it. And we love our little vibe downtown. It certainly comes alive here in the summer. Wallace Miller is a firm that does a lot of different things, whether it's personal injury. It's a lot of what you do, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
We've talked a lot about multi-district litigation. We've talked about so many different things with the attorneys. But I remember our conversation about personal injury, and it sparked an interesting conversation about how it all kind of works. Because I know as soon as we start talking about personal injury, people start texting in or calling in, and they're like, oh, they're just money-grabbing people for people. And it's just, I have to always kind of push back on that a little bit, Nick. And I imagine sometimes you do, too. I get why the reputation is there.
Yeah.
But you're really doing a lot of tough work for people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I appreciate the compliment. I like to think that I am. And without a doubt, there, to some extent, the stigma's warranted. You do have a lot of different attorneys out there trying to make a quick buck, settling cases short, kind of churning and burning through cases, taking shortcuts and not doing what's best for the client.
They're just trying to get as many as they can.
Trying to high volume, trying to get as many cases as they can and trying to resolve them as efficiently as possible. Efficiency is definitely everybody's friend, but it's all about putting in the work and the time and the effort with the clients and on the case and, taking depositions if you need to and doing all the investigation and going to trial if you need to maximize the recovery for your clients and make sure that you're putting them in the absolute best position that you possibly can.
We're not going to name names here, but I call them like billboard attorneys, although there's some fine attorneys that have billboards too. I guess ones that if you're in, no matter which TV market you're in, it's the same person on the television screen with a number that then it filters to other people, right? Because that's sometimes how these firms work.
Absolutely.
It's one guy or two guys up there, but you're not talking to those two people.
Right.
And Wallace Miller, you know who you're talking to.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, every single one of my clients, I mean, I try to make a point to talk to them very, very often. I think it can be a little bit difficult sometimes with my schedule, but I've got such an incredible team. I've got my paralegal, Ari. We hired a new guy, Alex. I mean, he's a phenomenal writer. Ari is just, all my clients love her. I mean, they literally email me just randomly, being like, oh, tell Ari, give Ari a shout out.
I like that.
So if you're not talking to me, you're definitely going to be talking to me at least, I'd say, once every 2 weeks. You're going to be talking to Alex or Ari or somebody else on my team. We hired another Alex. She's a former defense attorney, and man, she is awesome. She's fierce. She's works really, really hard. She has insight to how the other side thinks and how insurance companies think. That I think is really, really valuable to our team. So
two Alexes and an Ari?
Yeah.
You gotta get some other letters in the alphabet there represented on the team.
Right.
But I like that, and it's nice that you name people too, because I just think that puts an exclamation point on the fact that you're a firm that's helping people out, and people will know the names of the people that are working for them and really fighting for them. You call some of these other people from the billboard attorneys, they're just trying to settle immediately. And not that settling can't be a perfectly good conclusion and one that might work out great, but every attorney I have from Wallace Miller, the consistent theme I get from you all is we are not afraid to go to trial if need be.
Right. Yeah. Never, never. And the reality is we're not, I mean, some firms don't litigate at all, meaning they won't file a lawsuit if the insurance company is being unreasonable or the defendant or the corporation, the wrongdoer, is being unreasonable. So for some people or some firms, that's sort of where the work stops is right when they hit that first point of conflict, they stop and they don't even file the lawsuit. They don't do any of the discovery because, frankly, a lot of times you can work up a case very well during discovery. I mean, there are all these books that I read.
Discovery is when you're looking for all the evidence and trying to gather all the facts. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's the information exchange and gathering portion of the lawsuit. But there, I mean, to treat discovery kind of like you're building the case for trial. Not kind of that. That's
what it is.
That's what it is. If you do that really well, most of the time you can get an incredible settlement, short of having to go to trial and put your client through that stress and through the, you know, the uncertainty of a trial.
So there's a way to settle and a way not to, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
You go at it like you're going to end up in trial, and that forceful attitude, that forceful defense, that forceful prosecution of the case, essentially, from you guys, can often lead to a settlement because people go, okay, yeah, we're ready to settle on this one.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
312-981-7200 is our phone number if you have any interesting questions about this. Nick Kelly and his team at Wallace Miller can be reached at 312-261-6193. You can also go to wallacemiller.com for more information. After the break, I want to kind of talk through how damages get determined, right? Like, you hear these settlement numbers and you go, huh? How did that person get that? What does that mean? Well, there's a reason behind it. Chatting with Nick Kelly from Wallace Miller, 312-261-6193 is their number. 312-981-7200 is ours. Ray, hang on the line. You've got an awesome question. I just want to set this up a little bit, so do not go anywhere, Ray. I'm going to call on you in just a moment. But Nick, obviously money is how the civil system works, right? I think a lot of people see big million-dollar settlements and they go, oh, these people are just going after money. Sometimes, and this is the system we've got, right, Nick? Like, that's how we compensate people.
Yeah, exactly, right? I think when most people think of the American justice system in the United States, they think of the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
What's important, and, you know, by no means am I denigrating the criminal justice system at large, but the reality is it's very limited, right? It's there to punish people for criminal intentional bad conduct.
Mm-hmm.
The civil justice system allows relief, or it provides a recourse to people who have been harmed by the carelessness of others, right? Where they might not have a criminal remedy. In fact, under the criminal justice system, the case technically belongs to the government, not the person, right? So the civil justice system provides a remedy, and it's called damages. And it comes in the form of money, and it's
what we got.
It's what we've got.
And so I just want to make sure people understand that, because we've talked about like cases against like drug manufacturers, stuff like that. Yes, the federal prosecutors could bring a case against a drug manufacturer, and they have, and that might be great, and that might change how they operate, might arrest people who did wrong, but that doesn't get all the people who are damaged by the drug any compensation. That doesn't get them any money for dying, for not being able to pick up their grandkids anymore. The civil side is where an individual, John Doe, can bring the case to get what they deserve. Am I understanding that basically okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yep.
All right, so damages take two forms. We want to focus more on the compensatory. I'm saying that correctly, right?
Yeah, correct.
I didn't say it right the first time during the commercial break. You don't have to lie. I really messed it up. There's punitive, which we may have time to get into, but compensatory damages. What does that mean in layman's terms here, Nick? Take off your lawyer hat and tell me what it means.
Yeah, so compensatory damages it's essentially money. It's a remedy or a fix designed to make people whole and compensate them for the injuries that they've suffered as a result of someone else's carelessness or wrongdoing.
And when you say make them whole, is it like, what would be the dollar amount that would reflect if they had just lived their life in a normal way without the injury? What would that have been? And then try and determine the kind of the difference of the dollar amounts between those, sort of?
It's
like lost wages, stuff like
correct.
That?
Correct. Yeah, it's essentially, it's designed to put the best that it possibly can, and it's not perfect because, frankly, there's no amount of money that can put somebody back into the same position that they would have been had they not been injured.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the goal of it, right? And it's generally broken up into two broad categories. You've got non-economic and economic damages.
Mm-hmm. I imagine economic ones are the ones that are like really easy to understand. This injury happened. You missed 3 years of work. 3 times X equals whatever. You had medical bills. We add those up. God forbid, funeral expenses, stuff like that. Cost of living, right? You had to change your home to fit how you were. That's what economic is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Economic damages they're easily quantifiable. They've had an economic impact on your life. Medical expenses, lost wages,
right?
Future plans of care, everything that you just described.
Yeah.
The non-economic damages are what I refer to as human losses, and frankly, you know, I think those are oftentimes the more important damages, right? So it includes the pain and suffering, disability, loss of a normal life, or in some cases, scarring and disfigurement, emotional damages. These are damages or harms, I should say, harms that greatly, in a lot of cases, curtail somebody's ability to enjoy the pleasurable aspects of life. And it affects their experience of life altogether. And so, in my opinion, even though they're the most elusive and they're the hardest to prove and the hardest to quantify, I find them to be the most important.
Well, I imagine talking to a jury, too, it makes a little, it's harder for them to come up with that number, or a judge or whatever, or in a settlement, to come up with that number. But there's ways to do it. And I always use the example of like picking up the grandkid. But you mentioned disfigurement. What's the emotional harm of every day you look in the mirror, you look different than you should, right? Or how you were your whole life. Like, that means something. That is something. But you're right. It's hard to quantify.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to quantify. And so it's the attorney's job to sort of orchestrate or organize the best story that he or she can possibly do through the witnesses and through the other evidence. I mean, frankly, John, I think you would make for a great attorney because you're so good at you're so good at interviewing people and eliciting responses that cast their story in the most favorable light, and that's what I think makes for a great attorney, is somebody who's able to do that, somebody who's able to create a story through all of the most important witnesses in the case.
If you want to bring me in the courtroom, I don't want to go to law school. I don't have time for that. But I'll make like a Billy Flynn like final case. I'll sing a song and dance for the jury.
I'd love it. Yeah.
Just, you know my number. I'm on standby. All right. You kind of outlined the two things. I want to get to Ray because this is such a great question. Hey, Ray, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah. Okay. How are you guys?
I'm great. What do you got here for Nick?
Well, I was curious when you guys are figuring up the compensatory damages. How much age plays a factor in it?
That is such a great question. So you're saying, like, if someone's older or younger and you're trying to figure out lost damages or those sort of non-economic factors that Nick was talking about, like if you're hurt at 30 and you, in theory, could have done 60 more years, is that kind of what you're going at with age?
Yeah, but, like, you know, someone's still working at age, say, 65, and they make a very good living, but, you know, their age... How much does that factor into how much they get?
That's a great question, right? Go ahead, Nick.
No, absolutely. That is a fantastic question, and one I get often. There are jury instructions that protect people who are older, right? Anybody above the age of 30, I'd say, doesn't have a perfect back or a perfect neck. You know, we're not perfect specimens of health. We fall apart over time, or we have normal wear and tear.
Nick's telling me this on my 40th birthday. Thanks. Keep going.
So first and foremost, there are jury instructions that instruct jurors to award damages for an aggravation of a pre-existing condition, right? You might have some manageable occasional back pain that mildly interferes with your life to some extent. But if you get in a car accident, you know, maybe that back pain shoots up and surges up and it's permanent and it drastically affects your life. The jury instructions protect you in that instance. And so, you know, as your attorney, I would argue that all of the stuff related to that delta, that increase, flows from the injury that you suffered, and it should be compensable. Now, there are, in terms of people's average lifespans, you know, there might be limitations or at least some diminished value for people who are older, and they might not have to live with a disability for the rest of, you know, I mean,
their life is just not, the rest of their life isn't as long as someone who's 20. I mean, obviously.
Exactly. And so there might be, you know, economic implications to that. But from a non-economic standpoint, you know, my argument is, hey, listen, we work really, really hard in our younger years so that we can enjoy our older years. And I believe, you know, I found it to be the truth in my own life, and I'm only, you know, I'm 32, about to be 33, but life gets more and more rich as I get older, and it's like the time that I have on this planet is more and more valuable. So I would argue the exact opposite. I would argue that the value of that person's case, even if they are older, should not be diminished because they were a little bit older.
Boy, that's a great point, Nick. I love that. And that's so true, right? I mean, that's obviously great lawyer maneuvering to come up with that, but that's also the truth, right? You work your whole life so that you retire, have golden years, and boom, something happens when you're 67. Sure, you may only have 30 years left instead of 70, but those 30 you had built your whole life for to do and spend and do it well. That's a great point. Ray, thank you for calling. What a great question.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ray.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. I have a couple more questions, so we're going to push Mike Leonard back 5 extra minutes. He will not mind. Do you mind sticking around through this break in the news to chat a little bit more?
Sure, yeah,
absolutely. All right, Nick Kelly from Wallace Miller, 312-261-6193 is how you can reach them. We've got this break. We have news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and then more Let's Get Legal. Mike Leonard in a little bit talking about AI and colleges and how kids are getting in trouble and what his law firm is doing to help. I shouldn't say kids, they're adults in college, but what they're doing to help that. And our conversation with Nick Kelly continues now from Wallace Miller. You've been hearing a lot of Wallace Miller attorneys over the past, what, year or so already? Yeah, it's been great meeting so many different aspects of this firm. The I think the main theme, Nick, that I get with Wallace Miller is you guys are compassionate fighters. Does that kind of make sense?
I'll take it.
Or, yeah. Yeah, you should take it. That's a compliment.
Yeah, because
all of you really work on these individual cases, even when it's like multi-district litigation. Which we've talked about with other attorneys at the firm, it's still individual stories, individual cases, individual research done on individuals who have suffered things, right? There's always the person-to-person contact. You've talked about that and the team of people you work with to help with people. They're going to be talking with you. Tim Jackson, we were talking about so many things with the baby food and all that sort of stuff. And this is a long way to say all the Wallace Miller conversations are at WGNradio.com. There's a Let's Get Legal tab, and you can just scroll down and see them all because they've all been really fascinating conversations. So the compassion is there because you guys deal with this a lot. But you guys seem very able and willing to fight, and not in like that cheesy billboard way, but like in the legitimate, like you were saying, during discovery phase, no stone left unturned. We're going to show the other side what we're doing,
right?
So that they know that, hey, they're ready to go to trial if need be, or hey, it's time to settle if need be too. Is that a fair sum up of what you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not trying to write your slogan or anything, but if you need some help, you already volunteered me to come and maybe
I'm tapping you in, man.
Yeah, exactly. WallaceMiller.com is where you can go for more. 312-261-6193. I didn't keep you here just to talk at you more, Nick. I wanted to talk a little bit more about awarding damages. And again, this whole conversation will be at WGNradio.com. We talked about compensatory damages. That is like economic damages, like this person was hurt, they had medical bills, they lost their wages, God forbid a funeral, cost of living, non-economic ones, the pain and suffering, which I always thought that's what punitive was the pain and suffering one. No, punitive is another damage that you guys can seek. Just generally speaking, what is it?
Right. Yeah. So punitive damages, and they're not available in all cases, and frankly, they're not available in a lot of most personal injury cases.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's not true, but a lot of them.
Yeah.
But whenever the defendant or the at-fault party's conduct is so egregious, whether it's reckless or intentional or fraudulent, the jury can award punitive damages, which are, you know, in addition to the money that's intended to make the injured person whole. Punitive damages are designed to punish the defendant and deter future conduct that's similar. And so you see that a lot of cases. You see it sometimes in trucking cases, but you see it a lot in the product liability mass tort cases that we handle. You know, when a manufacturer releases a drug on the market that they know is unsafe, or they don't disclose something that they know is unsafe about the drug. So that's where I see it a lot. But it can, you know, you can have reckless conduct in the context of normal personal injury cases as well.
Right. So just to sum up, like the slip and fall or the car accident where someone didn't intentionally go out and hit you or something like that, or it was an aggravated DUI or something like that.
Right.
For the most part, that's going to fall into the compensatory lane. But if it's a company that has a history or knew for a long time that this drug caused X, Y, or Z, they didn't do anything about it, a punitive damage can not only be punishment for that company for doing it, but also to help them understand they should never do that again, and for other companies in the same sphere to understand that litigation exists too.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's the difference between those two. I want to talk a little bit about the really unfortunate cases that involve wrongful death. I know there's so many families out there that in their moments of grief, their first thought isn't, how do I get compensated for my loved one's loss, right? Like, and it shouldn't be. They want to just comfort their family in these times of terrible situations. But the unfortunate reality is that some of these personal injury cases that we talk about, while someone's alive, they're able to claim damages. If they die from that, are their family able to claim damages for that sort of stuff?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So generally, in Illinois, at least, wrongful death cases are sort of divided into to belong to the deceased had that person survived. So, you know, let's say it was a horrific and sort of, you know, a thing that happened. Let's say somebody, for example, might have burned alive for a period of 30 seconds or 40 seconds.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, is horrible, but that there would be a claim that would have belonged to that person. So the pain and the suffering of that experience that gets assigned to the family, and then there's a separate claim that belongs to the family, and that's for the loss of that person. In some cases, you don't have the first claim that I talked about is called it's called a survival claim. The other claim is called the wrongful death claim. And a lot of cases, you don't have a very big survival claim, but you have, you know, a family member's loss is very profound, very devastating. And so it affects people and families on both a financial, you know, in financial ways, and then the other ways that we've talked about, right? I mean, you lose somebody that you love abruptly, they're taken out of your life, and your world is shattered, and you don't have, you know, it's awful. I mean,
the wrongful death one I knew about, right? Like if this, he was the provider of the family and he gets killed and he was going to live for 30 more years, then we start going through the compensatory damages and that adds up, and the loss and the he was a wonderful father and grandfather. We've lost that in our lives. It's hard to measure, but let's try and figure out a number. I had no idea about the survival aspect of things, but you say that one's a little bit harder to get a case for.
Well, with the nature of, a lot of death cases is that, you know, oftentimes, hopefully, it's not where the death was really prolonged and
right
and terrible.
Yeah, let's cheer ourselves. No, that's fine. I mean, it's important stuff, and I don't mean to like pivot away from that. But there's people that are listening that might be thinking of this. This is exactly what happened to a family member. The one thing I wanted to ask was when I was talking about like people grieving in the moment. How much time does someone have to file one of these? Is there a statute of limitations in certain cases for wrongful death claims?
Yeah, so it's in Illinois, all personal injury cases are generally 2 years from the date of the incident. In this case, the date of the death. There are some extenuating circumstances, but the general rule is that's the rule. There are, if it's a case against a municipality in Illinois, it's actually shortened. It's only a year. So again, I don't want to commit to specific timelines.
That's fine, but generally speaking,
it's either a year to 2 years, depending on who you're suing.
What I'm guessing is I'm saying is you can grieve your loved one, obviously, and grief goes on forever, but
correct.
You can begin the process of grieving that loved one. You can go through the funeral process. You don't have to be calling Wallace Miller the day
after something happens. Not right away. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm just getting at is that sometimes feel like people are so inundated, the last thing they're thinking of is that. So if something in the last 2 years, if it's municipal, around a year, just generally speaking, you've got some time, but time is important.
Exactly.
You don't want to wait forever, not only for statute of limitations, but I imagine there's things that you can do in the discovery phase that are easier to do the sooner after something has happened.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. This is great, Nick. I appreciate you opening us up our eyes to a lot of how all this works. I'm so glad that Wallace Miller has been on the show now for a long time, and we're looking forward to even more. 312-261-6193. Who should be calling, Nick? What sorts of people should be reaching out to you guys?
I mean, really, anybody who's been injured in any kind of context should reach out to us. Our consultations are free. I'm always happy to talk to people. You might not know whether you have a claim, and you may or may not have a claim, but I'm always happy to help you talk through it. Anybody who's lost a loved one, I mean, just anybody who's been injured, can reach out to us, and we're happy to talk to them for free.
Yeah, and that's great to know too, because you're okay talking with someone if they don't know they have a claim. You're
exactly.
There to help them, and if they don't, you'll in a very polite, kind way. But even that can be some closure for someone.
Definitely.
Not that they shouldn't get a second opinion, just like a doctor. That's totally cool, too. But, like, just to have that conversation, and if you're like, look, you know, that's horrific, but you likely don't have a claim, even that can be a resolution for someone, right?
100%, yeah.
312-261-6193. WallaceMiller.com. That's W-A-L-L-A-S. Nope, I messed that up. W-A-L-L-A-C-E. M-I-L-L-E-R.com. Everyone knows how to spell Wallace Miller. Why am I spelling that out for people? It's Saturday. Nick, have a good one, okay?
You too. Thanks, John.